Well, it's easy to understand why the experience of Soma was so valued by the Aryans. Today, we are not sure what plant the Aryans identified as Soma, though certainly many have searched for it. Later in the Hindu traditions, these same kind of ecstatic experiences were sought through practices such as meditation, yoga, and asceticism. The last deva I wish to mention is Rudra, who was known as the Howler. Rudra had no friends among the gods, and he dwelled in the wild and terrifying places. He dressed in animal skins and wore his hair matted. He despised human beings, and he often afflicted them with sickness and misfortune. Aryans usually left their offerings to Rudra outside the village, and they implored him to stay away. Paradoxically, Rudra was also a healer. This paradox is one that we shall encounter frequently when we study the gods of classical Hinduism, especially the great god Shiva. Many scholars, in fact, believe that the Vedic deva Rudra provided a prototype for the later god known as Shiva. In addition to the devas I've mentioned here, the Veda also mentions Yama, who is the god of death, Ushas, the goddess of the dawn, Kubera, the deva of wealth and prosperity, Surya, the god of the sun, and other gods and goddesses of lesser note. At different stages in Vedic religion, different devas took center stage. Although there were many gods, when the Aryans worshipped, they often treated one god or goddess as the supreme deity. Max Müller, the 19th century scholar of the Vedas, coined the term henotheism to describe this practice. Henotheism is a sort of synthesis of polytheism and monotheism in which one god is worshipped without denying the existence of the other gods. This approach to divine worship continues throughout much of Hinduism today, and we'll return to this theme when we examine Hindu theism in a later talk. Now let's complete our systematic examination of the Veda by discussing the Vedic understanding of human beings. For the Aryans, the essence of human life is the soul, which in a very commonsensical way, they associated with the breath. The word they used to designate the soul was Atman. The Sanskrit Atman has cognates in the English word atmosphere and in the German word Atmen, which means to breathe. The ancients frequently associated breath with the soul. That connection derives from the simple observation that when a person dies, the breath leaves the body. Thus, they concluded, the breath must be what animates and enlivens the body. From here, it's just a short step to the deduction that the soul endures while the body perishes. At death, the soul was believed to travel to Svarga to join the gods and the other dead in a happy post-mortem existence. But there's not complete agreement in the Vedas about the ultimate human destiny. Some hymns suggest that the soul descends to a place called the house of clay, or the underworld, ruled by the god of death. Some indicate that the soul simply dissolves along with the body. Apparently, the Aryans were as mystified by the fate of the human as they were by the creation of the world. When the Aryans arrived in the Indian subcontinent, their society was already stratified, according to occupation. Their culture comprised a division similar to that of Christian Europe. There were the priests and the teachers, who were called the Brahmins. The warriors and administrators were called the Kshatriya. And the merchants, artisans, ranchers, and farmers were called the Vaishyas. The later Vedic period also mentions a fourth class of people called the Shudras, who were the people of the land, what we might call peasants. Many scholars think the Shudras may have been descendants of the old Indus Valley civilization who were thus incorporated into Aryan life.